everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com, movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm very excited for this week's show because I'm talking about Draft Day with the movie's number one fan, Adam Riske.
I wrote a poem about it once.
You sure did. You read it on the show.
I did, yeah, yeah.
It was a moment.
Yeah, I thought that it would go viral. Did not.
That's never happened to our podcast.
No.
I'm sorry. That should have been the thing that did it.
Well, I feel like the screenwriters should have at least reached out to me.
Is the actual NFL draft coming up? Is that why we're doing this? Okay.
Yeah, and the April 11th, 2014 was the release date of Draft Day.
So we're near the anniversary.
Our baby's going to kindergarten.
I saw this movie. This might have been the last time I saw like three movies in a day that was not a festival.
Okay.
I saw The Raid,
yeah.
Draft Day,
yeah.
And Oculus.
It's a pretty perfect day.
It wasn't bad.
Yeah.
Although, seeing The Raid first, I mean, Draft Day was probably good to follow up The Raid because it's such a different animal, but like, it's hard to see anything after The Raid.
Yeah.
You're just tired. It would have been The Raid 2, actually, right?
2014, yeah.
Yeah,
it would have been The Raid 2.
Yeah.
That's even more of a
movie
you need to kind of detox from a little bit, but in a good way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I love that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Draft Day.
Yeah.
It's happening.
It should be on Turner Classic Movies. They should just, it should be
it
in the
like
National
that,
Film Registry.
It seems like a movie that TNT would devote like 75% of their real estate to.
Mm-hmm.
And like someone's dad would watch it every time it came on.
So I have to have kids because then I'll be someone's dad watching Draft Day. Yeah.
Because what? You have to bleep like three swears and that's it? There's nothing else objectionable in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like you'd
have to. From a ratings standpoint, I mean.
You'd have to. I'll just get this out of the way. This is your show. I know you're not going to hold back, but this is a movie I know it's not perfect.
Yeah, sure.
But it's perfect for me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm excited to talk about
it. Yeah,
I
am too.
Hey, have you seen anything good lately?
I've seen a lot of stuff.
Let's have it.
Okay, so I'm going to try to get through these quick because there are a lot. But
all right.
I saw Nancy Drew and the Hidden Staircase.
What did you think?
Well, first, I'm glad that it was on VOD very quickly.
And very quickly.
I understand.
Like the same month as it came out
like
in
3 weeks.
Yeah.
And that's just because your review was the only reason why I saw it.
Okay.
I like Sophia Lillis, but I do feel weird being a 36-year-old man watching Nancy Drew in The Hidden Staircase. I watched it while I was getting my arthritis treatments, which I think is the way that Kat Shea intended. but I enjoyed it from the 90s Harriet the Spy-esque vibe that I got from it.
Yeah.
And I like this would be Nickelodeon movies if this came out in the 90s. And I liked it as that type of throwback. I think that the world that they set up and the characters are very charming and it's a very easy movie to watch.
Yeah.
And the mystery was I don't know how I felt about the mystery because it was like
It's pretty Scooby-Doo.
It's very simple.
Yeah.
And then it's very grown up at the same time.
Sure.
So it's very Scooby-Doo-ish. I think the thing that was bugging me the most, and this is like a joke bugging thing, is it's established at the beginning that she's from Chicago and that she moved to this new town.
Yeah.
And she's wearing a Cubs hat.
Okay.
And okay, whatever. I need to get over that. I'm a White Sox
perfect,
fan.
Right.
Nobody's perfect. But she has a line later in the movie where she's driving a car and she's driving stick, but she's not real good at it. And then her friend / rival says, oh, finally something you're not good at. And then she goes, well, no one drives in Chicago. And I was like, oh, what?
Yeah, that's not true.
That's a crazy line.
Yeah.
That's a crazy line of dialogue. But when I saw her, like, snooping around the locker room with the Cubs hat on, I was like, this should be a whole slate of Wrigley Field mysteries starring Nancy Drew. And everyone has the villain being Addison Russell.
I don't know who that is.
Google it and you'll know. You're like, ooh, yeah.
All right.
That's a good one. He's He should be a Scooby-Doo villain. But,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a bad person.
Got it.
Anyways.
Is he a player, an owner?
He's sort of an on-the-outs player. He was part of the 2016 World Series team. He was the starting shortstop, but he is a very bad domestic
oh, dear.
issue Got person. Got so, it. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Wow. Anyways, on that note, right. I will go to The Crow.
Yes.
Because I saw that at midnight at the Music Box, and I was very happy that I did because...
Is this 25 years? Is that what
25
this is?
Years, okay. Yeah, in May.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. I was very happy that I did because it's a movie I haven't seen maybe in 5 years or so, and having some space from it. At first, I was just like, oh, well, this might feel like a new movie again, but it totally doesn't. Like, I know this movie, like, backwards and forwards. And I think where I'm at with it right now is I don't get much out of it from a story perspective, but I'm so drawn in by the look and by the music and the art direction. And Brandon Lee is very kind of charismatic, and it's a very iconic presence in the movie that I still enjoy it from that regard. And I saw it in the best way possible, which is on 35mm in a theater. And
was it crowded?
It was like 2/3.
Oh, that's so not bad. At all, yeah.
Yeah, so not bad. And the programmer who programs the Music Box of Horrors came up and did like an intro for it and everything. And that was kind of a nice thing. And then before the movie started, they had the Crow logo that was on like the CD and everything and on the movie poster. And that was projected onto the screen, but it had the red curtain over it.
Right.
And it was a very cool kind of getting you in the mood type of thing. So I dug it. I stayed through the end credits so I could hear Big Empty in like theater sound. And I was like, do. I was so excited.
I haven't watched it in a number of years, and I know the last time I saw it, I thought maybe I had outgrown it. Like,
it's very much a young man's movie.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure like from a nostalgic perspective, I would still enjoy it because, that movie was a big deal to me in 94.
Yeah, there's a lot of the programmer pointed out before the movie started that there's some lines of dialogue that are just weird, like really kind of like out there stuff where like somebody will call somebody a stupid ass hair. And I never like realized that. And then there's like the whole bit where the pawn shop owner is just like, well, shit on me. And he says it like over and over and over again. And you're just like, you should say, well, fuck me.
Right,
like,
right.
Shit, what? Hello? What's going on? I was happy that I saw it again. I was not happy that I saw 200 cigarettes for the first time.
Oh, no.
And I paid like $30 for an out-of-print DVD to watch it.
I'm sorry.
And yeah, it's going to get worse.
You could have borrowed mine.
Well, I didn't know this. And it was skipping at the very end. So like right before they walked into the party, it just would not work. So I had to like go. I'm like, on YouTube, somebody has to have uploaded scenes from 200
ending,
cigarettes.
Right.
And I couldn't find it. And I ended up having to go on to like Daily Motion, like some asshole, and then watching it there. And I didn't get the end credits, but I saw like at least who paired up. And I was just like, how did that happen? Like, and it's not a good movie at all. It's really bad.
I was so excited about it, though, back in 99 that I went like the first day. By myself. Mm-hmm. And then I think it was one of those situations where like that night my friends wanted to go. So I ended up seeing 200 cigarettes twice in the same day.
That's
theatrically
400 cigarettes.
I contributed to most of its box office.
Yeah. That's like at least 70% of the box office.
But the cast had me so excited.
Yeah.
And I was a sucker for just like, oh, the big party movie, you know, can't hardly wait, whatever.
I texted Rob after I was watching 200 Cigarettes because my big takeaway from the movie was that I'd never had like a Kate Hudson crush growing up, but I did watching her in this for some reason.
She comes away from the movie.
She's very just kind of chipper and like it's a very appealing character.
It's a very Goldie Hawn performance.
Yeah, and then I texted Rob that I'm like, I think I finally have the Kate Hudson crush I was supposed to have in like 2001.
Then let me tell you about a little movie called Fool's Gold.
Ooh.
Let me tell you about a little movie called Raising Helen.
I saw that one.
Me too.
Well, John Corbett was in it, so I had to.
That's true. Yeah. I also saw Fool's Gold, though, so I'm not above it.
Yeah. There's only one Fool's movie, and that's Ones Who Rush It. And then I watched another 99 movie. Yep. I watched Simply Irresistible, starring Sarah Michelle Gellar. And let me tell you, Patrick, I was enchanted. Like, I don't know what happened, but it's very much like Down with Love before Down with Love.
Okay.
It's very, it's trying
it's
to
Sean
be.
Sean Patrick Flannery, right?
Yeah, but he, I mean, like, everyone's lifted by this magic energy.
Literally, right? Like, they're, like, floating.
Yeah, there's parts where they're floating and there's scenes where, like, they're having orgasms while eating. It's like 30% of the movie is people just orgasmically eating food.
This does not sound like a movie I want to see.
The opening credits, though, like she goes to a like one of those farmers market type fairs where people who own restaurants get, you know, seafood and all this shit. So like she goes, like she's shopping and she knows all the vendors and everything like that. And then there's like a crab, a magic crab that like pinches her leg. And that's like in the first minute of the movie. And it's just like, magic crab, are you in or are you out? And I really respect that. And it's another 99, like Patricia Clarkson, like, oh my God, like there was no more beautiful woman in 1999. Sorry, Britney Spears. Sorry, Christina Aguilera. Patricia Clarkson.
Wasn't Kidman in Eyes Wide Shut in 99?
Okay, so Patricia Clarkson is number two.
I remember going to see Playing by Heart.
Yeah, that's on my list. I haven't gotten
to that one yet. In 99. Again, my second viewing, yeah, because I saw it by myself, and then my group of friends wanted to see it.
Yeah.
And Doug was meeting us there.
Yeah.
And so we're sitting in the theater, the movie's maybe 10 or 15 minutes in, and Doug isn't there. And then finally he shows up.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I'm sorry, I thought we were seeing Simply Irresistible, so he bought a ticket to Simply Irresistible. He didn't think we were seeing a different movie. He thought the movie we were seeing was called Simply Irresistible.
Yeah.
And so bought a ticket, went into the wrong theater, spent about 10 minutes in there, and then realized, wait a second, no, this isn't it. And
So. That movie's so bananas, but it's it commits to what it wants to be.
Sure.
And it's like, are you along for the ride or not? And magic if you're crab. Along for the ride, yeah, magic crab. It's all good.
Magic crab.
I saw
the title for the movie.
Yeah, I think it probably would have been. Although you can't put like your female lead on a poster that says like magic crab.
Yeah, I guess not.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, there's no upside to that. I saw Love and Air Sex again.
Now, listen, I admit, I just said that I saw 200 Cigarettes twice in a day and Playing by Heart two times theatrically.
Yeah.
But what you're saying right now is insanity.
I've watched it at least five times.
Wow.
I own it.
What? Digitally, right?
Yeah.
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 What is it that keeps bringing you back to that movie?
There's three things. Okay. One is Sarah Paxton.
Sure.
Because that came out around the same time where I was chasing that... Chasing the Innkeeper's Dragon.
Right.
Two is that it's like an Austin, Texas travelogue, and I really like Austin, Texas, and I can't go there as much as I'd like to.
Yeah.
And then three is that I think it says some really interesting things about relationships that you don't normally see, at least in mainstream romantic comedies. And it's like this sneaky assassin because you go in there with like the air sex and I have no patience for any of that stuff. But then like there's these beautiful like little vignettes within it. And I think it's simply irresistible.
In that movie, they also get magic crabs.
They do. Yeah.
I need to see it again. Why am I saying that sentence? But I don't remember hating it. I just remember having so little patience for the air sex and for the one sort of self-styled obnoxious character.
The Dane
guy from
Cook
Whitest
character.
Kids You Know. Yeah.
Yeah.
That it put me off the rest of the movie because I actually remember very little of the rest of the movie. Is that Addison Timlin?
Yeah, she's in it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I barely remember.
Yeah, it's really special.
I'll just have to
good.
Borrow your digital copy sometime.
Sure. Sounds good. And then two more quickly. I saw Dumbo 2019.
Which you liked.
Which I really did like.
Yeah.
And I was surprised because I'm like everybody else. Tim Burton's made pretty much the same movie 90% of the time for the past 30 years.
Yeah.
And then I'm watching Dumbo and he so would rather be making Batman Returns 2 with Dumbo because Danny DeVito's back in it. Michael Keaton's back in it. They're acting like characters straight out of like a Batman movie,
Michelle
kind
Pfeiffer
of.
Michelle Pfeiffer electrocutes Dumbo.
That would break my heart. I don't know whose side I would be on.
Did you know that was supposed to be Billy Dee Williams, and that was supposed to be the birth of Two-Face?
In Dumbo?
In Batman Returns. Like,
yeah. I think I heard that on Plank Check.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I saw it in IMAX. I think that helped a lot because I was really taken by the art direction, and I liked that they did it in the Mary Poppins Return style where it was like a sequel just as much as a remake.
Okay.
Because the original's only 60-something minutes, and this one's about 2 hours.
I didn't realize that. I thought it was just a...
No.
Remake of Dumbo.
No, like the first half of it is basically the remake of Dumbo.
Okay.
And then the second half of it is like this, it's almost...
what happens after Dumbo?
Yeah. It's like they took Tomorrowland, but then improved it.
Okay.
Like, because Michael Keaton owns this giant, amusement park, and the set design is just incredible. And it's one of those movies where just I think like The Crow, where you're just so taken by it, like visually. It's weird because Tim Burton almost forgets that, oh yeah, this is about Dumbo,
right?
Because he so is more interested in like the circus carnival performer aspect of it. But Eva Green is speaking in a French accent and saying "Come on, Dumbo," and it's like the greatest thing ever.
Doesn't sound terrible.
We fly Dumbo. It's so good. And then lastly, I'm going to write a reserve seating with Rob about this next week, but I just want to kind of give like a shout out to a movie. It's a documentary I saw called At the Drive-In.
Okay.
And it's about the Mahoning Drive-In, which is in Pennsylvania. And actually, when I'm visiting Rob next time, I'm going to this drive-in.
Nice.
And it is like The Rep and like Out of Print, it's just this beautiful kind of look at this one drive-in theater and the people who own it and operate it and how they were originally like a first-run drive-in, but they were affected by the digital changeover. Right. And they had a choice of either basically mortgaging their future just to afford this $100,000 digital projector or just trying to go at it with classic films on 35mm. And they opted for the latter. And luckily, unlike every other movie theater documentary where they fail, like somehow they found a niche.
Oh, nice.
And it's just really interesting because you kind of see the workaday of running a drive-in. And it's just so charming, and I think it might be my favorite movie I've seen all year so far.
How does one see this?
It's pretty readily available. Like, okay. if you go on Amazon, you can rent it. You can rent it on Apple. I bought the disc through the Facebook page and stuff like that. But I'm going to be nervous when I go to this drive-in for real because I'm like, these people are movie stars, not just normal people.
Right.
So the whole time I'm going to be like, oh my God, that's that guy.
Is this the one that does the all-night horror thing?
No. Okay. No, it's a different one. But like in the movie, they're like talking about, oh, this one night didn't go over well, and then they show the marquee and it's Spider-Man 1 and 2, and I'm just like, oh my God,
on 35 and
on 35 and it was raining, and that's why. And I'm just like, even in the rain, like,
it's not Spider-Man's fault.
You could get up on your hood and do the Spider-Man kiss.
Yes,
in the rain.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's interactive.
Yeah, it was crazy. So I'm going, when I visit Rob, we're seeing Last Action Hero and Demolition Man.
Oh, they already have the schedule.
Yeah, if you go like Mahoning Drive-In's website, they show all the movies that they programmed so far for the summer. They haven't had like the full list, but that's that theater you and me and Rob talk about sometimes, where I'm just like, how do they like do this? Like every weekend, it's some kind of great double feature.
Yeah.
So I'm
that's a sweet 93 double bill.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And so At the Drive-In, it's a great documentary. I'm going to write more about it, but I wanted to mention it here because more people will hear it here than read from the article. So.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you for the recommendation.
Yeah.
So I'm at the mercy of my letterbox, which doesn't work right now. So I'm going to just have to try to remember what I've seen.
You want me to bring it up on my phone?
I relied too much on technology. That's all right. I watched on my new Criterion Channel subscription. I said last week that one of the movies I wanted to watch was Bugsy Malone, which I watched and very much enjoyed. Have you ever seen it?
I haven't, no.
It's really... it's such a weird movie. Like, I'm not sure what the goal was to, like, let's do this gangster movie, but with children.
Mm-hmm.
And it's every cliche, and every kid seems to understand the part they're playing in the movie they're in. And that's what Erica and I were trying to figure out as we're watching it, because as children, they don't have the same frames of reference. Like, they don't understand the cliches because they haven't watched a bunch of these movies. So how do they know how to play these parts so well?
Yeah.
But Paul Williams does the songs, and they're great, of course, because it's Paul Williams. And the day after we watched it, I think I had like 15 minutes to kill. So I stopped in the Half Price Books and found the soundtrack for like $5.
Holy shit.
So I was very excited
to
now own the soundtrack to Bugsy Malone. Here's a movie that I watched a few weeks ago that I want to talk about with you, because I know you saw it and I haven't talked about it on the show. And
okay.
Someone, I think, tweeted at us like they wanted a whole episode devoted to this movie, and we're not going to do that, but it's Dragged Across Concrete.
Yeah.
The new movie from S. Craig Zahler.
Yeah.
I was a big, big fan of Bone Tomahawk.
Me too.
I was a much bigger fan of Brawl in Cell Block 99 than you.
Yeah.
This is my least favorite of his movies so far.
I think I might like it a little bit more than Brawl in Cell Block 99, but I have similar complaints.
It's not a bad movie.
And I don't think so either.
And it's always watchable and always interesting. I just think it's like a little too unfocused.
Mm-hmm.
Too long, especially for, I think, where it lands. Like, the performances are interesting. The dialogue, for the most part, is engaging. There's a few times where, and again, I was trying to divorce myself from a lot of the stuff that they talk about with him and his politics. And, you know, mm-hmm. I think you can portray characters in a movie that aren't necessarily who you are. So it's not like, oh, just because these guys are, you know, fascist scumbags, that means he is. But there were some scenes where it was just characters sitting around voicing his opinions on things like social media and like what's with young people today,
or like pregnancies and things like that.
There were certain things that I was like, well, these guys are just mouthpieces for your dumb beliefs. And obviously we don't want to get into spoilers, but there's a scene halfway through the movie that is both, I think, the best and worst stuff in the movie.
Okay.
I thought it was more interesting. I thought it was like a little short film that was so much more compelling than most of the bigger story surrounding it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it does something that I can't get past.
Yeah, that scene, it's a testament, I guess, to how well made the movie is that I don't absolutely hate the movie, even though that's the way that scene plays out. Is one of the most upsetting things I've ever seen in a movie.
Yeah. I guess is good filmmaking, right?
But to what point?
I agree, but I was like, well, I guess that he got the reaction that he's getting means that he did what he set out to do.
Yeah, it's tough because I want to talk about the text of the movie, but I can't divorce myself of who he is, because it's so much, this is a movie by an author. And I remember, I had like a friendly debate with Jay B's, son about Brawl in Cell Block 99, because it was, I took that movie to task for its macho point of view. And I thought it was kind of almost embarrassingly kind of, I don't know, just, sexist almost point of view. And I second guessed that a little bit after talking to JB's son, you know, that just because like the characters act that way, it's not necessarily like, you know, you should have an author should be able to write whoever they want.
Right.
And I agree with that to a certain extent, but I feel like when I read some interviews with S. Craig Zahler, there's also this, well, I don't care what you think, but it's almost like him trying to provoke you even more. And you have to, if you're, the way I feel is if you're a filmmaker and you put something that ugly and unpleasant out there, you should have to listen to the slings and arrows that come with it. And I understand that he probably is, but just to deflect it and say, well, I don't care what you think, I think is the most immature way of handling
that. Sure, sure.
And I am at the point where I get less and less excited about the prospect of one of his films, even though I think he's a talented guy, because I won't say who needs this, but I don't need that ugliness in my life.
Yeah.
Like I heard, and I don't want to criticize something that I haven't seen, but I heard like about his script for the Puppet Master movie. I didn't see it because I've never seen a Puppet Master movie, so why start here? But I definitely heard kind of like some of the things about Nazis and about Jews and stuff like that. And that was enough for me to know that, okay, this isn't for me. Like if that's how you want to play it, then maybe this is not the filmmaker for me. So, like I said, very talented guy, but it's just tough for me to, outside of Bone Tomahawk, to like kind of wrap my arms around supporting him.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I'll continue to see what he does next. I just thought Dragged Across Concrete was kind of a big sprawling mess, and sometimes I like those kinds of big sprawling messes, and this one fell short for me.
Yeah.
Again, even though I think everybody does their job, obviously he's trying to provoke. Just the casting of Mel Gibson is, you know, like, ha, ha, ha. There's something just kind of bratty about, in particular, Puppet Master, my God. There's something bratty about that whole, like, look at what a bad boy I am. Look how I'm going to push buttons.
Yeah. It's funny because of a movie where they cast Mel Gibson. It's like my least objectionable thing about it. Like, I think he's I don't feel great saying this, but I think he's good in the movie. And
sure.
Like, so is Vince Vaughn.
Everybody is. Tom Johnson comes in and crushes a scene. You know, Jennifer Carpenter is good in her stuff.
Yeah.
It's a movie that I genuinely wanted to like, because even though I'm not as big a fan of him as a person, I have been a fan of his work.
Yeah.
And, this one just didn't do it for me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Well.
Yep.
And then I recently rewatched two by Ed Burns. I rewatched The Brothers McMullen for the first time in many years.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't divorce myself from 1995 when, like, that movie meant a lot to me, because I was somebody who someday wanted to make indie movies about people sitting around talking about relationships and stuff. And that was a model for that kind of a thing, even though I could tell that, like, it was kind of rough, you know. It just has that 1995 Sundance charm for me. The performances are all, like, just shy of being good, you know. It's like the best people in community theater. Like, except for Connie Britton, it's easy to understand like how she became a star. And I like that he continues to use a lot of those same actors, because Connie Britton has come back and worked with him a number of times. Because the other movie I watched, she shows up in, it's called Looking for Kitty.
I haven't seen that one.
I had never seen it. It's from like 2004.
Okay.
I guess he was trying to raise like $6 million after Sidewalks of New York and couldn't. And so just bought a digital camera and went out and shot this movie with David Krumholtz, like basically on the streets of New York. And you can tell how much of it they're stealing, you know.
Yeah.
And it's David Krumholtz is a guy whose wife has left him, and he's looking for her. His wife is played by Ari Myers, my childhood crush from Kate and Allie. And then Shakma, didn't we have a whole thing about
Shakma?
She's like wearing a weird harem girl outfit for part of the movie.
Yeah, I remember Shakma.
Shakma. so it's like every Ed Burns movie. Like, that's charming and slight.
You know what? Like, I feel like I need to do, like, the New Beverly's doing a Bruce Dern festival. I need to do an Ed Burns festival for myself.
I'm kind of doing it.
Because I haven't seen any of his movies in a while, but I do remember, like, I mean, I like Brothers McMullen. I like She's the One. I like Sidewalks of New York. I remember enjoying Newlyweds. Did you ever see Newlyweds? That was like,
I saw Newlyweds. I don't remember it.
Yeah. And
the only one I never saw was Nice Guy Johnny.
I never saw that. I never saw The Groomsmen.
I saw The Groomsmen. I don't remember it.
Okay. I saw The Fitzgerald Family Christmas.
Okay.
And even when I don't like wholeheartedly like the movie, I'm just so glad that he's making movies.
Exactly.
Because he's so it's like charmingly committed to his thing.
Right.
And I really like it. It's like it's like how I love Toadies. It's like, not everyone's going to love Toadies, but the people who love Toadies really love Toadies.
Well, he makes one kind of movie. Yeah. He makes it again and again and again. He's obviously very, very influenced by Woody Allen. Yeah. But, like, I don't know. He's just, he's out making movies at a time when, you know, there's all these would-be filmmakers who are just waiting around for their break.
Yeah.
And here's a guy who is making, you know, I think Newlyweds he made for like $9,000.
Yeah. And he likes to make relationship dramas, and that's like money in the bank for me.
I'd be curious. Yeah. I ordered a book. He wrote a book called Independent Ed, and I'm waiting for it to arrive. Like, I placed an order of just like all of his movies because you can buy them all used for like a dollar.
Yeah.
So, and his book was like $3. I'm wondering how biographical he gets. I think it's mostly about the production of Brothers McMullen, but I'm just fascinated by how much of his movies are about not liking your dad and people cheating on people.
Yeah.
I was like, what happened in his life that this is such a recurring theme?
Yeah. At least he has films to work that out.
Yeah, so I guess.
That's good.
I don't know. I enjoy his movies, even though there's not one of them I think is really good. Sidewalks of New York is probably his best.
Yeah, that's one of the few movies I've ever rented from Hollywood Video.
Ooh, very nice.
I do remember that.
We happened upon it right when we got back from New York. We happened upon it just as it was starting on cable, and we sat and watched the whole thing.
I was going to hope that you found it on a sidewalk.
I wish we were that lucky, but there were a few locations that we were like, oh, we were there, we were there.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was fun.
Yeah, He's a guy I'm always rooting for. It's weird because, like, I'll never, like, watch one of his movies and just, like, wow, that's the
one. You're never going to be blown away. Never.
But then when I hear, oh, he's got a new movie on VOD, I'm like, I can't wait till Friday.
Right?
Like, I get really excited about it.
God bless him for still making movies. Yeah. I don't know. It's so great.
Yeah.
Anyway, draft day.
Draft day.
Let's do this.
Yes.
Let's get into it.
Yeah.
Draft day is, like, your love of draft day, I feel, snuck up on you a little bit.
Yeah, it did.
It's like you saw it and liked it.
Yes.
But it wasn't like top 20 material.
No, it didn't make my top 10 that year.
I mean top 20 all time.
All time? Yeah, now it is.
Right.
Yeah.
Is it top 10 all time?
No.
Okay.
No. I mean, there are a lot of good movies that have come out in the past 100 plus years.
But would you watch most of them before draft day?
No.
See?
Yeah. Draft day is very easy to watch. I reread my review from when it came out, and I remember begrudgingly liking it. Like, it was like I was embarrassed that I liked it. And it reminded me kind of my Wishmaster growing appreciation. And I didn't realize until fairly recently that Draft Day, I think, I'll never say it's the only movie that did this, but I think that it's very much informed my changing kind of viewpoint on movies and what I want out of them since I've been writing and podcasting at F This Movie.
Okay.
I think when I first started, especially if I look back at like top 10 lists and stuff like that, I was very much like, this is good. This is something I enjoy. But this is worthy of a top 10.
Right,
and then eventually, over time, I've gravitated to these outlier movies that are outside of the mainstream movies that everybody likes, that everybody appreciates. And I have a theory, and I think I might be exaggerating, but I think there's some truth to it, that the outlier movies that you like that not everybody else likes are kind of the movies that inform who you are.
Okay.
And I'm not sure what Draft Day is saying about who I am, but the fact that I love Draft Day so much and that it clicks with me so much, it helps me understand me a little bit better. And it kind of, I think what I enjoy most about it is we're putting on a show spirit. It's just like everybody knows what they're in. Everybody knows that this isn't Oscar material, but they're honoring the material with as much professionalism and kind of pep that they need to make it be kind of a crowd pleaser and like kind of a winning movie. And I just really respond to that. I really like that. I could go on, but yeah, I'll let you kind of.
It is super watchable.
Yeah.
I watched it last night and I had just a weird bad day yesterday and wasn't in the mood for almost anything, and then put Draft Day on and was like, oh, turns out Draft Day is what I was in the mood for, because it is very easy to watch, like you said. There's always going to be part of me that feels... I don't think it's a cynical movie, but I think there's something about it that to me always feels born of cynicism. And I remember this from the first time I saw the trailers back in 2014 and maybe said as much back then, that like once upon a time, sports movies were about the big game. It was about being committed to this sport that you love and doing your best and playing your heart out and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And this movie is about like deal making, that it's about the business of sports, but not in like the Oliver Stone way where he's going to examine the business of sports. It's just as sort of fluffy and commercial as every sports movie.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that just has to do with like the popularity of fantasy football makes a movie like Draft Day possible. And there's something that feels cynical about that to me, that like, oh, this is what we're getting excited about now is the...
I see where you're coming from, but as somebody who does fantasy football, it's like peanut butter and jelly, like Draft Day with fantasy football. Like, I won't speak for everybody, but I probably speak for a lot of people who do fantasy football. It is a blast, like, once you get into it. And kind of having that, you know, GM hat on where you're building this team and then like you're just like, oh, this guy's not doing it, and like, what can I do to finagle with my roster to improve it just this little marginal amount, like, especially for people who kind of are like OCD about certain things like that, with lists and stats and things like that. It's just really enjoyable. So I think Draft Day kind of couldn't have happened unless Moneyball happened before it. I think that Draft Day probably was, they never say it directly like in any of the behind the scenes or anything like that, but the screenwriters probably like knew of Moneyball and kind of had like a model in mind of, you know, making the GM of a team, of a sports team, the hero of their movie.
Boy, is he ever.
But I guess one thing that you can take away from it in terms of like an uplifting message is, yeah, I mean, like, he's a suit and he's a business guy and he's making deals, but it's him against the world and it's sticking to your guns. And it's like, if you really believe in something and how difficult it is to follow through with it and how easy it is to listen to outside opinions and let other people take away what you want to do.
There's some interest. It makes it a little weirder too that it's Kevin Costner, who we're so used to playing the athlete, and it's like, oh, now he's the guy in the suit, right?
Yeah.
He's the guy. There's things here and there that I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting. I guess I never think about that in terms of the business side of football. And again, the movie can't be very critical of the business side of football because it's basically just an NFL commercial over and over again.
This
down
movie,
to the Papa John's product placement, which is so embarrassing.
This movie was definitely criticized by people for being NFL porn at a time when the NFL needed an image upheaval because of CTE and because of all the problems that they have with
player
suspensions and just...
luckily, they've gotten everything
they've cleaned
out
it all up.
Everything's good now.
Yeah, and because of Draft Day, that's what set these wheels in motion.
Movie made $600,000 worldwide, I saw. Made like $28 million domestic, and $600,000 worldwide.
Well, that kind of shows you the popularity of professional football outside of America.
No one gives a shit about football.
That's why they're always going to London. They're just like, eh? They're like... Instead of like, are you ready for some football? They're like, let's put a shrimp on the barbie. And they're like, that's wait, Australia. That's Australia.
Damn
oh,
it.
My God.
Damn
we're
it.
So bad at this.
Shoot.
No wonder
I'm
why
sorry,
we only
guys.
Made 600,000. Yeah, I don't know. I think right around the time I started doing fantasy football was probably when Draft Day like really clicked for me. I think it kind of was one of those things where...
Is this a chicken egg scenario?
It was like a bit of a chicken egg scenario because after... You know, I set my first fantasy football roster. I was definitely watching Draft Day constantly for like the first fall that I was doing it. And I think it's also responsible for my Kevin Costner resurgence of fandom,
okay,
too.
Okay.
There's just something about him where when he's even more of a dick, he's that much more appealing to me. Like, we were watching Waterworld recently, and we were just laughing at, like, what a shithead he was. Yeah. And most other actors, you would just be like, God, he's such a douchebag. Like, if it was Steven Seagal doing that, you'd be like,
oh,
what,
well,
a douchebag.
You're like, this is just a documentary. Yeah. Yeah. Steven Seagal being an asshole.
But with, like, Kevin Costner, it's like he's got this, like, self-destruct in him where anytime, so like it's like if some say he does a really good job on something, they're just like, hey Kevin, you know, that was a great take, you know, it was amazing what you did with that inflection of that one little quip, and then he's just like, I hate your mom. And then they're just like, what
let
why
the tornado
would you say
kill
that?
Me what, there's no tornado in this movie, Kevin.
Yeah, I don't
let
know,
let it come, let yeah. it kill me.
Yeah. Yeah, I just like his deflection of, like...
I know.
Just...
refuses to be...
Yeah.
Nice guy. How did Waterworld play for you, by the way?
It's a gem.
It is, right?
Yeah, it was better than it's ever been for
it
me.
It was,
I
yes.
think that Ulysses cut is fantastic.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's just yeah. the long version. It needed the long version.
It was like a Gatorade for a thirsty mouth. It was like you're just watching it.
When will the rest of the world catch up, though?
Never. And I don't want them to, because it should be just for this group of the Waterworld faithful. But it made me want to watch Avatar really bad again.
Yeah, it did.
And then before I go to Orlando again, I definitely will be rewatching yes. Avatar. I got my Fast Pass reservations for the two Avatar
nice.
Rides.
Oh my
so
gosh,
I'm
so jealous. When do you
I'm
go?
Looking for June.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So. There's a super long cut of Avatar too, if you're interested.
Is there?
Yeah,
okay.
Might.
We should do a screening.
I was going to say, yeah. we could have a screening
yeah.
of it here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I don't think it's as good as the theatrical, honestly.
Okay.
There's like a middle cut that's probably the best one. It's got like 9 extra minutes.
Yeah. I lost my mind when I heard like the hint that Vin Diesel might be in the Avatar sequels.
And now Michelle Yeoh, too.
Yeah, I heard she was like officially cast.
They just keep...
If they got Vin Diesel, though, yeah. this is like... It fits right into his Riddick thing.
It definitely.
Like,
does.
This is perfect.
Yeah.
It's really good.
As long as he's willing to just support and yeah. not try to turn it into the Vin Diesel show.
Hey, man, he did the Billy Lynn's long halftime walk, and
which
that was just a supporting
see.
Role. I listened to the Blank Check episode of that.
Okay. I haven't listened to it because I didn't see the movie.
It's very technical because they're going, like, way into how Ang Lee did, like, 128 frames per second
okay.
and stuff,
okay.
and that it looked like they described it as it was like. The screen wasn't there and you were looking at the movie through a window.
Wow.
Or like it was like an open window.
Right.
And I saw it by myself at like an ArcLight theater,
yeah,
but it was,
that
in
was
24
the,
frames per second.
The guy came in and yeah. did the introduction.
Yeah, it was very nice of him. And told me that,
first, oh,
told me to get off my phone, even though I was the only person in there.
This was my first viewing of Draft Day
yeah.
since becoming a listener of Blank Check.
Yeah.
So it was fun to see Griffin Newman as intern Rick.
Has he ever talked about working on Draft Day?
Yeah,
on the
story's definitely come up.
Okay.
I wish I could remember specific episodes where he tells
yeah.
stories about working with.
Yeah, I was curious if I tweeted to him last night hoping that he would answer before the show, but I just needed to know if the pancake line at the end of the movie was an ad lib or scripted, because Griffin Newman's reaction to it looks spontaneous and it's makes the scene even better because it's just like it's like this look of utter recognition of that is maybe the most awesome thing that anyone's
yeah.
ever said to another human being.
Yeah.
And that line, for those of you who don't remember, it is, come on, say it with me, you pancake eating motherfucker. I remember when I saw that in the theater, I burst out laughing because I was happy. Like,
I do that sometimes.
Yeah.
Usually during John Wick movies.
Yeah. It was just like, I couldn't believe. Like, my life
and
didn't have this.
And you begrudgingly liked the movie? It sounds
yeah.
like the movie completely won you over.
And that part completely won me over. Yeah. I think part... I remember going to... I saw it with my mom and dad, and I remember we went out to dinner afterwards, and we were kind of looking at each other like, that was stupid, but wasn't it good? It was like one of those things.
It is weirdly like Ivan Reitman's best movie in a long time.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, as a movie that's like... maybe a double. You know?
Like I'll beg to differ on the double, but okay. I think he takes it to the house, but that's
really
a good,
likes the split screen.
Yeah, what is that?
He really likes when Costner like breaks out of the split screen.
Mm-hmm.
He really likes
it's like Woodstock,
the title card and the ticking clock. I mean, there's nothing he won't throw into this movie.
Yeah, yeah. No, he definitely feels liberated in some ways that he didn't in Evolution.
Right, or My Super Ex-Girlfriend.
Or No Strings Attached.
Oh, I forgot that was a Reitman joint.
Yeah, yeah, sure was. Yeah.
That is the lesser of the two Fuck Buddy movies.
I'll agree with that.
Yeah.
I only saw Friends with Benefits once, but I remember thinking it was okay.
I saw both of them once, but yeah.
Yeah.
Here's a question about Draft Day.
Yeah.
Is there any part of us that is meant to believe that this was Sonny's plan all along?
I wrestle with that because
that to be true,
yeah.
Wouldn't he have to know that no one was going to pick Bo Callahan? Which is just a weird sort of convenience that's never quite explained, that no one picks him.
There's a lot of things that don't make sense and a lot of things that
like,
kind
why
of
are they
do
eating
make sense.
Papa John's?
Yes. Well, that Papa Nasties. sorry, Shaquille O'Neal, because I know you're trying to fix their branding.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they hired him to be on their board of directors to
what?
To like change their image.
What?
And what's he going to do?
Need Shaq.
He's just going to go on
we
TV.
Need that
and be
Shaq
like,
Fu.
He's like,
can we rock?
This Reese's Pizza is really not that bad.
Can they stop putting the pepper in the box? That's one thing they could
God.
Do.
They used to, at my fraternity on Sundays, they used to just get like dozens of boxes of Papa
That's
John's.
That's what it's meant for. Yeah. It should exist in college towns and nowhere else.
Yeah. But when you got Pizza Express, just go to Pizza Express. Anyways. So the thing that doesn't make sense with Sonny's plan is that if he wants Vontae, apparently nobody else wants Vontae, which is weird.
No matter
even
what
though
he wants him.
It's either the Browns at 7 or no one,
right.
Which doesn't make any sense.
Well, he says he'll drop into the late teens.
But then it goes into like, oh, you might be in the second round.
Right.
So it's strange. And then he trades up to, he writes himself the note, Vontae Mack, no matter what. So you would think, okay, that's what he wants. He's got to stick to his guns all day. And that's part of what I like about the movie is that he wants that, but you can tell like throughout the day he's about to break and just go along with somebody else. It's not like I'm shining you on. It's like he's really conflicted and he might like go against his because you can see how excited he is when they get the number one pick. And then he's I think he's earnest in terms of like finding out more about Bo Callahan.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make any sense for him to trade up and like mortgage their whole team to get number one.
Right.
But it ties into like so many great little branches, even if this doesn't make sense from like his plan, because you've got Dennis Leary's motivations and you got Frank Langella's motivations. And then you've got make a big splash. Which, by the way,
that
I noticed.
That scene is so much earlier than I remembered, by the way. Yeah. I remembered it being halfway through the movie. I was like, really? Midway through the day, they just go to a water park? Oh, no.
That's close.
First thing in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah. Two great things about that. The first one is it comes after another analogy scene about tumbling. Do you remember that?
That's right.
Where he's just like, I just so happen to be taking, Vontae Mack is just like, I just so happen to be taking my nephew's tumbling, just like I hope I don't tumble in the first round. And I think it's so funny because he like, what if the kids didn't want to go tumbling?
Right.
Would he be like, this is for an analogy, guys. Can you get in the car, please? So there's that. And then also I noticed in this viewing, Frank Langella never takes off his sunglasses. There's no scene where he has his sunglasses off. This is like his Day-Lewis shit. Like, he probably never took his sunglasses off, like, throughout the entire shoot.
Never.
Yeah. No, I love Anthony Molina, the owner of the Cleveland Browns in this movie.
It's
he so wants to be friends with Bo Callahan. Like, one of the great things about this viewing, too, is I was studying it more than watching it. So, like, I paused the scene where they showed Bo's hooking up with girls page.
Right.
And the site is called Bo's Pack of 10. And then it says right under Bo's Pacaten, like his subtitle, it goes, "Who will be next?" And then there's a video on the left banner, on the left side of the screen. It's like this little banner video, like an embedded video. And it says, it says something like, "Oh, she's going to get it. Watch now." And it's like Bo's latest conquest. And it's like in night vision.
What?
Yeah. And I'm just like, this is something that would be shut down by the NFL, like, immediately.
Oh my gosh.
But I just imagine like Molina, like, refreshing the page all the time. And he's just like, way to go, Bo.
Just hoping that one of these times it's going to be his own daughter.
Yeah. He's just like, just smashing picks. Just smash those picks. So.
There's a great line near the end of the movie where Costner says something about like reading on all the fan blogs and chat rooms.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh boy.
Yeah, he's
the fan blogs and chat rooms.
Yeah, the Seattle GM. Like, the Seattle GM is such a dipshit.
Such a pancake-y motherfucker.
Yeah, he's just like, oh, the fans are mad at me, so I should probably like completely go back on my decision, right. Which is something a GM would never do. There's a lot of things in this movie that people would never do. Sonny's plan would completely fall apart if anybody didn't do what he wanted exactly.
Right.
If Seattle told him to go shove his pick up his ass and he still lost all the number one picks and he just had like Vontae at number one and then had his number seven pick, like that would screw up his plan.
Yeah.
If he,
well, he still could have gotten, what's his name at seven, right?
He still could have gotten Ray Jennings at seven. Yeah, but he was still like lost all of his first round picks.
He would have lost
and all the second round picks.
True.
So he would have had,
but he would have the team he wanted.
Yeah, but he would have mortgaged their future.
Mm.
One thing I do like is in that scene when Kevin Costner is getting revenge back on the Seattle GM.
Oh, right.
To like up the deal once Sonny kind of said, "Let me get back to you."
Right.
So Sonny does that to this GM, and he goes, "I want all my picks back. I want all my number ones back. Hold on." And then he goes, "And the deal's changed, and I want David Putney too."
Yeah.
And this movie's so good that I was just like, "Oh my god, he got Putney also!" Like, I don't even know. He's
a character,
a fictional character,
only off screen that we learned about in that scene.
Yeah, but like you feel like it's a big pickup.
Well, you just feel like he's really putting the team together.
Yeah, he's got really everyone. Putting the team
he's
together.
He's got Ray Jennings now. He's got Putney.
Speaking of the putting the team together, in the last scene, this, like I said, I studied this movie. Brian Drew.
Brian Drew, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what? Brian Drew was the only person who, when he got the playbook, he sent the $100 back and said, "Pay me this when I win you the Super Bowl."
Yeah.
Because character is Brian Drew.
That's right.
Yeah.
Not Bo Callahan.
No,
Bo
Callahan.
None of his friends came to his party.
They never came to his party. There's so much I have to say about this.
There's so many. Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, so shoot.
His plan falling apart when he changes the deal on the Seattle guy.
Okay. Okay. I'll just talk about the Bo Callahan thing for a second. So, the coach for Wisconsin, who was Bo Callahan's coach, Sam Elliott. His name is Dick Moore. And I'm just like, oh, who's more of a dick than Dick Moore?
Nice.
Bo Callahan.
Oh, interesting.
Like, this movie is like poetic.
Layers.
There's
it's
layers.
Got layers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's there. It's accessible layers. It's not like.
Not like us layers.
Yeah. 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 Thanks, Jordan Peele. Can I just watch a horror movie, please? I don't want to read a thesis. Thank you very much.
Jordan Peele's draft day.
Yeah.
I was amazed at the number of character actors that show up.
Yeah.
Sam Elliott showing up for one scene, or Chai McBride,
mm-hmm.
or
Pat Healy.
Pat Healy, of course, mm-hmm. or the guy that plays the W. Earl Brown, who shows up as like the
investigator guy. There's a really good running joke with him where he always like leaves these dramatic pauses where like Kevin Costner has to be like, "Well, why did he do that?" And then finally, towards the end, he's just like, "Just tell me why he did that."
But basically, everybody that shows up in the movie is like somebody you're kind of happy to see.
Yeah, it's like, a face.
Which is nice. Rosanna Arquette shows up for one scene just because a movie with Rosanna Arquette is better than that same movie.
Silverado Reunion.
Arquette. Oh, that's right.
The mind boggles thinking that Kevin Costner and Rosanna Arquette were married in the universe of this movie.
Yeah.
Like, Jennifer Garner is no slouch. She's great, but
we need to talk about Jennifer Garner, though. Yeah. It's not her fault.
Yeah,
it's...
we need to come up with like a fridging type term of Jennifer Garner, but yes. It's like the nannying or something. Well, it just, because it's always like she has to be a mom. Garnered. Yeah, right. She has to be a mom, too. They're like, how do we work in this mom angle?
I don't understand
angle?
How she went from being the lead of Alias, which is this beloved show, to now this career of playing like concerned wife and girlfriend in movie after movie. Now, to be fair, I'm part of the problem. I didn't see Peppermint, so I don't know if the world
slept on Peppermint.
Maybe the world slept on the opportunity to make Jennifer Garner a giant movie star again, but... I just think this movie just does her no favors. I most scenes she's just required to like sort of furrow her brow and like, what are you thinking, Sonny? Or say the wise thing, or has to keep repeating like how much she knows and loves football as though she wouldn't be accepted in this world by audiences if she didn't have to keep proving her place.
I go back and forth on that because I think it might be true, like in this work environment, that she does have to do that.
Maybe. I think you could give her one speech to Dennis Leary and not have to keep saying, you know, even when he says, like, can we talk about football? I can always talk about football. Like, we get it.
Yeah.
You love football. Yeah. It's your job.
She's a Cleveland girl. She wasn't born into this. She had to work her way in.
Why does she leave her entire lunch?
Because Dennis Leary's such a douchebag, she has to get away from
him. But Dennis Leary, here's the thing about Dennis Leary.
He's great in this movie.
He is really good, although he does appear to be wearing lipstick, which freaks me out a little bit.
Leary's got a Leary.
In his first scene, Erica and I were both like, why is he wearing lipstick?
It's probably from his wife, because she likes the fancy people
so
from Dallas.
I like that he's kind of a douche.
Yeah.
I like, you know, when he's showing off his Super Bowl ring, just like how lame that is. But I also think he has a real point and a real point of view, and he's not completely wrong. He's not just a stooge. He's a guy who I like that he doesn't want the rookie quarterback. I think an easier version of this movie makes him all in on Bo Callahan and angry when Sonny goes against that.
Yeah.
I like that he's not interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the movie bends over backwards to sort of give everyone what they want, which makes it very satisfying, but also fantasy, you know.
Yeah.
But I like that each character is coming at it from their own point of view and isn't just, for as cliched as I think a lot of the movie is, I think most of the main characters aren't just stock.
Right.
Which is to its credit.
Yeah. That's why I think this is like a TCM movie waiting to happen, is because there are Edmund O'Brien characters and there's some deep character moments in this movie. I appreciate that because not all movies have that. One thing that I wanted to bring up about there's so much I want to say about this movie. One thing about Dennis Leary.
Yeah.
Okay, so in that scene where she leaves her whole breakfast and stuff like that, I said Leary's got a Leary because he totally has this like little Dennis Leary speech.
Yeah.
And it's so ridiculous that I wrote it down.
Okay.
Okay. So he goes, first off, there's a lot of things he does in this movie that would get him fired, like on the spot. He sets fire to the draft analysis and drops it on his boss's desk.
Right.
He goes behind his boss's back to broker a trade with another team.
Right.
Yeah.
I know you want to get to the Leary quote. Yeah. I don't know how football works. Does everyone wait until the day of the draft to talk about this shit?
No. No, they don't.
Everyone seems surprised and like, okay, it's 5 a.m. Now we can finally talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
Let's get this all figured out today haven't been doing it for weeks.
It's silly. I've never been inside a draft room, but I would imagine that there is a lot of truth to the fact that if the pick that you want or that you're expecting another team to take doesn't go the way that you expect, it does kind of cause chaos.
Pat Healy says something to that effect.
Yeah.
And that line rings true where he's like, I don't know, my whole thing screwed up because nobody's doing what I thought they were going to do.
Yeah. Although I don't think that a GM, even if they make the joke that, oh, he's a rookie GM, so he's green and you could take advantage of him, which bullshit. Like a person who is a GM of a team is either very brash or very smart or both.
And does he so, get like, taken advantage of?
He gets kind of led. He gets kind of dog walked into like what he should do by everybody.
But he doesn't really give anything up.
No, he doesn't. But I mean, like, I think that he basically has to have Kevin Costner, like, coach him into a decision.
Sure.
Where it's, like, not really his choice, where he's just like, oh my God, what do we do? And then somebody right. offers a suggestion. He's like, okay, fine, that's what we'll do.
But he's not, like, tricked or fooled. He doesn't get screwed at all.
No, it's, like, a fair deal. But I met Pat Healy at Flashback Weekend a few years ago, and I asked him about this scene in the movie.
Yeah.
And I said, when you shoot a scene where you're on the phone with somebody, are they on the other line with you, or is it, like, recording? And he said, well, sometimes actors will do the phone call with right. you, and sometimes they won't. Kevin Costner was not on the phone with
Damn
me.
Damn it.
And I'm just like,
did that disillusion you a little bit?
Yeah, but then I met Amanda Wiss, and she said how great he was, and that they're That's on an right, email chain that. With the entire cast of Silverado still. And I was just like, he's the best.
Including Rosanna Arquette, his ex-wife? How did they make that work?
I don't know.
Oh,
I don't
my
know.
Gosh.
They seem pretty amicable, though.
There's a little bit of bitterness where he says, like, isn't there some art opening you should be at or something?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's true.
But she is at the reading of the will.
Yeah. I thought her whole thing, the thing with the dad dying, that was kind of a weird shoehorn thing in. They yeah. kind of break up the momentum of the movie a little bit in a way that I feel is forced.
Yeah.
I do think it also goes along with the Costner being Costner thing, though, that... It's
he
not
fired
just
his own
that
father.
He fired his own father. Right. And then you don't find out until like late into the movie right. why he did it. And it's right. for a, like a noble reason, but he could have told his dad, this is why I'm firing you. But apparently he never told his dad that's why he did it.
He just made his dad die in the tornado.
Yeah.
No. Stay there. Yeah. You die in the tornado.
He's just like, I know you're a legend. You're gone. the Leary's got a Leary thing
yeah.
is, okay, so... Dennis Leary's talking to Jennifer Garner, and then he says, double X jet ice cream 36 counter naked waggle 16-9 Tennessee free. Know what I'm saying? And her reply is the best because she goes, don't patronize me. Of course I know what you're saying.
Yeah. Again, they just have to keep hammering that point.
Yeah.
It's weird that he does the whole thing through a chain link fence while smoking, though.
Yeah.
All in black and white. It's
yeah.
like, these shots don't match up. They're sitting in like a lunchroom.
I think I liked Leary even more ever since Stephen Hopkins told the Judgment Night stories.
Hell yes.
Well, it's for those of you who weren't there, the Judgment Night story was that the bad guys in Judgment Night were mostly bad people off screen.
Specifically Peter Green.
Yeah. And Dennis Leary was not that, but he thought it was amusing to egg these guys on, and it ended up with Stephen Hopkins had to punch out Peter Green in the street over an altercation that Peter Green had with a cab driver. But I just like the thought that Dennis Leary was just like constantly right, goading these right. douche bros just to like be terrible.
I had a moment today where I realized yeah. Stephen Hopkins would not be coming back to Cinepocalypse this Doesn't year, and I got sad.
Yeah.
I really was like, oh, I'm so excited he's going to be there again. Oh, wait, that's not just an annual thing where yeah. Hopkins comes. Schumacher, listen.
Yeah, Schumacher is supposed to be like it's the, not an the even, host
it's
or
not,
something.
It's not an even swap.
Here's the thing, though. Okay, this I must be like really primed for Schumacher season for a week of Mocker. The Batman first 1 through 4
yeah.
are coming back to the big screen.
When is that
happening? Fathom Events. It starts May 4th.
Okay,
it's like a Saturday for Batman, a Monday for Batman Returns. Then they wait a week, and then Saturdays
forever.
I think it's Saturday or Sunday. No, it's Sundays forever, and then like Tuesday is Batman Robin. The thing that bugs me is I would 100% go see Batman Forever in a theater, because when are you ever going to get that opportunity again?
Yeah.
But it's on Mother's Day. They can't do that.
Ouch.
Why?
We should do a show on Batman Forever, though.
Yeah.
I'd be down for that.
I'm going to say something controversial.
It's your favorite Batman movie?
It's my favorite of those four.
Okay.
I think it's the one I would definitely put on first.
Yeah.
Because I think that sometimes I just want to have fun.
Yeah.
Sometimes I want to just have fun watching Batman.
We watched it. We watched the trailer before Waterworld.
Yeah, I felt like I was at the WB store all over
it
again.
It definitely was like, yeah. Oh, yeah, I can watch Batman Forever right now. Between yeah. the new score. Who does the new score? Because they do part new score and part Danny Elfman's score.
I don't remember. Oh, Elliot Goldenthal. Okay. Yeah.
They do some of his score and then part of Elfman's score. And yeah. It's like, well, this is the best of both worlds.
Somebody wrote on Twitter that, and they posted photos of all of the backs of all four Batman soundtracks. And they said, tell me that these four movies didn't have better music than all superhero movies combined since then. And outside of Spider-Man 1, 2, and 3, I agree.
Yeah.
I mean,
that was a criticism of Spider-Man, though, when it came out, was that the theme wasn't good.
The Danny Elfman theme?
Yeah.
I think it's pretty great.
I wonder if maybe Batman spoiled everyone. So if not everything is Batman, it's like, whoa, it's not that memorable. Like, well, you're talking about Batman. Like,
yeah.
Nothing's going to come
close. It was
like
the Jaws of superhero
exactly.
movies.
Exactly, yeah.
So, yeah. Okay, Vontae Mack.
No matter what.
No matter what. Probably the best screen character since Marge Gunderson.
Well, you're speaking my language by imagining Marge Gunderson. It was very hard for me to not just make the Rod Tidwell comparisons.
Okay.
And again, Jerry Maguire does it differently because at least Jerry Maguire comes down to like a big game.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some relationship stakes that are on the line.
Yeah.
There's not so much in this movie, I know. He's got to patch things up with Jennifer Garner. But no, I mean, I like Vontae Mack. I would love more of him in the movie because Chadwick Boseman is obviously...
He's so good. And this was
great.
During the time when he was kind of still a rising star.
Playing either an athlete or someone
or
in
musician.
A biopic. Yeah, exactly.
It was always the biopic route for him. But when... When Costner opens up the note, or Jennifer Garner opens up the note and sees that it says Vontae Mack no matter what, or maybe it was Leary.
I think it's Leary.
Or Leary opens it up. It says Vontae Mack no matter what. Don't you get chills? Like, no bullshit.
I do love his reaction.
Yeah.
When he goes number one.
Yeah.
I like his.
Oh my God. That scene is acted so well.
Yeah.
Just like.
He's good.
Because he's the brash know-it-all,
right?
And he's stunned into tearful silence, and everybody else is going nuts around him. It's just great. It's just like one of those really well-acted moments.
Yeah.
But yeah, Vontae Mack is like, I feel about Vontae Mack like most people feel about T'Challa. Like, when I saw Black Panther, I was just like, yeah, I knew this all along.
Right.
Like,
better player, Vontae Mack or Billy Cole?
I don't know. We have to see where Vontae Mack finishes his career.
we saw where Billy Cole finished
his career. Oh, I remember now what I was going to say. At the end of draft day, when they have like the hype huddle before they take the field.
Yes. And then we don't ever get to see them play, even though that's really what we want, is to see like, I want to see Putney.
Yeah.
I want to see.
I want to see that like opening punt return from David Putney taking it to the house.
Brian Drew in better
shape
than ever.
15 yards further downfield. Tony Bagel said so. The strength and conditioning coach, Tony Bagel. He can squat 400.
It's like another guy that shows up in everything and you're like, oh, there's that guy.
He can squat 400. He can lift 250. Free weights, mind
you. Also, I'm telling you this on the day that you might draft a new quarterback. We haven't spoken of this until this moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you seen those secret workout tapes? So anyways.
There's a $100 bill taped to everyone.
God, Brian Drew is like, it's hard
he's Superman.
Yeah. Did you know he's the only person at the combine who they measured his heart?
The weirdest moment is during practice when Sonny's about to be killed by a tornado and he looks to Brian Drew and he says, no, let me go, son. Let me go.
When Rod Tidwell died, his heart went to Brian Drew because he's all heart, motherfucker. No, at the end, when they show the huddle, there's two players on the Browns with the last name Mack. There's another guy in the back. There's a back Mack.
Back Mack?
Yeah. You got a lineback Mack, who's Vontae Mack, and then you got a backup back Mack.
Wow, weird.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a Mac attack.
What a weird detail. Yeah. Mac attack. Nice.
Yeah.
I like it.
I want to see like billboards around Cleveland where it's just the two of them like back to back like a movie poster.
Mac attack.
And it says like Mac attack.
I like it.
Yeah, and then Macaulay Culkin's like doing one of those like the scream face thing.
Yeah.
I listened to his podcast. And
how is it?
It's all right. I was listening because he was interviewing the angry video game nerd, and I like that guy.
Okay.
He's good. Familiar. You need to watch there's this channel that the angry video game, his name's James Rolfe in real life. Very likable guy, super into like Universal Monsters, just kind of like 90s, 80s stuff. So he seems like a good dude. He's got a show called Rental Reviews where he took his basement and then like made it into like a mom and pop video store, and they talk about like old movies in there.
Okay.
And I swear to God, it's bizarro F this movie.
Oh.
Like almost to a person, I could be like, that's the Patrick. That's the Doug.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's crazy. You should see it because it's like the episode of Seinfeld. But then they probably hear us or see us and they're just
they probably don't.
Yeah, they should. Where they're just like, whatever, they're the bizarro ones.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like a mirror.
They're famous, so that makes us the bizarro ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, so we talked about the analogies. Yeah. We talked about Costner firing his dad.
Yeah.
There's nobody better than Kevin Costner at playing disbelieved, grumpy messiah.
Okay.
Like, that's his bag, man.
Yeah.
And Draft Day like really finds a role for him for that. I enjoy it. Yeah. So yeah, Langella never takes off his sunglasses. This is another movie where Costner sits on a bench in a scene.
Lucky bench.
Yeah. What a lucky bench.
Yeah.
Somebody tweeted that out like a year or two ago about how Costner is constantly sitting on benches in movies, and now I can't not see that.
Okay.
So like
I was not looking for it, so I didn't pay attention.
Yeah, if you want to see some good Costner benching,
yeah,
obviously Molly's Game, because it's him and Chastain.
Yeah.
But if you want quantity over quality, McFarland USA,
which
because
I haven't
seen. Track team.
Okay.
And he's on a lot of benches because
of benches
it's high school.
There.
Yeah.
Molly's Game is where my bench is at.
Yeah. we should just take a moment of silence to appreciate that. That was pretty great. Griffin Newman in the scene where Costner breaks intern Rick's laptop.
Yeah.
It's a really well-acted scene. Like, you feel like he really did have a lot of stuff on that laptop, and he's upset about it.
And really doesn't get any sort of satisfaction. I mean, he's told he'll be bought a new laptop.
With the all the bells and whistles.
Right, which, again, is just Kevin Costner not knowing how computers work.
Yeah.
You'll be able to visit all the fan blogs and chat rooms.
Mm-hmm.
Your inbox will be white hot.
Yep.
But everything on his laptop is lost, right?
Yeah. Damn it, Vontae, no Twitter.
Right. So
GMs hate that shit.
I don't know. I feel bad for intern Rick in that scene.
Yeah.
Because even though by the end of the scene we're supposed to be like, oh, it's going to be okay, and Costner did the right thing, I still walk away from that scene being like, Costner's a real dick.
Yeah, but
and doesn't really feel bad about breaking intern Rick's computer.
See, I think he does feel bad, but he has to like take a beat to realize that he feels bad.
All right.
He's not going to come to
it. Does the beat happen
right
off camera when the movie's over?
I think it just happens in my subconscious because it's an allowance that I'm giving the movie. Okay. I just wrote a note that just says, this movie's art, it doesn't beg for your adoration. It puts in the work and earns it.
Wow.
He talked about David Putney.
Yeah.
The climax of the...
Who plays Putney, like in the deleted scenes? Who do you think they cast?
James Marsden.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about...
I think it's just because I've got like really... Welling on the mind, and I'm thinking of another like guy who looks like Tom Welling.
Got it.
Yeah. It's funny because like every time I saw Smallville, I'm like, that's not Superman.
Yeah.
That's Brian Drew.
That's Brian Drew.
Yeah. And then I'm just like, okay, now it clicks. Now it makes sense. He's very good in Dozens too.
I saw Dozens too. I don't remember it.
Dozens 2 is far and away better than Cheaper by the Dozen 1.
Is Dozens 2 the one with Eugene Levy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Once you get...
Carmen Electra?
Sure.
I'm just Maybe. Saying people.
Did I ever tell you the story about the Carmen Electra calendar?
Yes. I don't remember it, but I'm positive you told me.
It was in high school. I went to Chris Kindlemarkt at Daily
Plaza.
Yes,
yes, yes.
And it was with my German class. And our teacher told us to be there. But he was always speaking in German, being a German teacher. So he told us to meet at the buses at like Hop vor Eins, which means half hour before one.
Okay.
But I thought he said like half past one.
Got it.
So we weren't supposed to leave Chris Kindlemark, but I had some girls with me and I had my friends, and like we took this whole group and we went to Sam Goody and we were in downtown. And I bought a Carmen Electra 1999 calendar. And if you want to know what that looks like, Google it. It's not safe for school.
Oh, goodness.
So then I was walking onto the bus and I had the Carmen Electra calendar. And then Herr Goodbye, who is my German teacher, he says, like, what is this? And I'm like, I bought it at Chris Kindlemark. And then he's just like, show me where you bought this. And he was like yelling at me because we were late. And he said that he thought that we were lost and he was going to call my parents and stuff like that. So it was this whole big thing. And then I led him around for like maybe 5 minutes. And I was just like, you know what? I didn't get it here. It was really embarrassing. And then he took my calendar, and this was like around winter break, and he gave it back to me when I graduated because I had 4 years of German, and this was like a year and a half later, and I'm like, well, now I can't even use this.
Do you think when Dozens 2 came out, he was like, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just like, man, I was looking for a Eugene Levy calendar, but like this will do because I'm just anybody from Dozens.
Yeah. Bonnie Hunt calendar.
Yeah. I also wrote a note that said the climax of this movie is like the trench run in A New Hope. I heard somebody refer to a movie or they said Draft Day pays off like a goddamn slot machine.
Yeah.
And I completely agree.
It's from
with
Blank
that.
Check.
Yeah.
Somebody mentioned it in the comments, and I said something about
that's
it.
Right.
A funny Blank Check reference. Yeah.
That's right.
Pays off like a slot machine.
Yeah. This is an Ivan Reitman, Frank Langella, Kevin Dunn, Dave reunion.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Bringing the whole team back together.
Kevin Dunn was recently in a Travolta VOD movie called Trading Paint. And it's got.
I was Trading Paint.
Oh, I liked it, but what does that mean?
That's a reference to a Shane Black screenplay, by the way.
Is it?
Maybe the screenplay for Lethal Weapon.
Okay.
He was describing a car chase and says the cars trade paint.
Mm. Yeah, so, it means the same thing in this movie.
That's what that is.
Can I spoil Trading Paint?
You know what? Could you not? Maybe because as soon as we're done here.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
There is a moment halfway through. Okay, so it involves fathers and sons. It's one of those dramas. But there are two rival drivers.
Like Draft Day.
There are two rival drivers, and one is played by John Travolta, and there's one played by Michael Madsen, who is not believable as a stock car driver. Believable as maybe the guy who bets on stock car drivers, but not as a stock car driver because he's bigger than the car. So he also owns, like, they also, of course, because they're grease monkeys, they both own their own, like, Travolta owns a garage, and of course, because Madsen is a douche, he owns like a Ford dealership. So there's a scene kind of three quarters of the way in the movie where Travolta finally relents and agrees to sell his classic Mustang to Michael Madsen because he needs money to soup up his car, which is damaged from a previous race, and he needs to like get a new stock car and basically like build it from the ground up for his son and all this shit. So it's established throughout the movie that Michael Madsen cannot beat John Travolta in a race. And now, because Travolta doesn't have a car, Michael Madsen theoretically could win the races now.
Yeah.
But then Travolta is just like, fine, I'll finally sell you the car, but I need all this money. And he doesn't hide the fact that he's using the money to build a new car. And then Madsen's just like, well, I guess I got to give you the money because it doesn't count if I don't like beat you fair and square and stuff. So he basically just handed him everything that he needed to keep winning.
Wow.
And it doesn't make any sense, but it is a fun movie.
It's like when the Seahawks give their picks back.
Yeah, it's like they're more invested in the Browns winning than the Seahawks winning.
What is that about?
I also think it's kind of weird that the Seahawks are so brash because if you have the number one pick in the NFL draft, that means you're fucking horrible. It means like you had the worst record in the NFL the year before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're going to go with Bo, right?
Yeah, you either go Bo or you go with your three number ones, but once somebody gives you three number ones, you don't trade them back.
Well, listen, they needed Bo. Okay, he was in a position where people hated him. We saw them. They had signs and everything.
But the draft revealed that Bo is not great, so why would Seattle want him still?
Yeah, why does no one else pick Bo?
I think it doesn't help that he left the draft.
Okay.
Because that makes you look like you're a flake.
P. Diddy told him not to.
Yeah. And then it is true that...
He's always good in movies, too, by the way.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was supposed to be Willie Beeman.
I know. Yeah. I'm glad we got Jamie Foxx.
I am,
don't
too.
Get me wrong.
Yeah.
But...
What if P. Diddy played Ray Charles?
Different movie.
Yeah, a little bit.
Or what if he played the guy in Robin Hood?
Azeem?
Yeah, like sure. Fake Azeem? I don't know, right. Or Electro in Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Did you say Carmen Electra?
Which is a movie. I have an Electro 1999 calendar. It's all Jamie Foxx's Electro from 1999.
It's all him just like with a birthday cake looking sad and being like,
him looking worried about Y2K.
Yeah. The reason why I brought up Trading Paint originally was Kevin Dunn is in the movie.
Yeah, right.
And sorry, that was a digression. So Kevin Dunn is in the movie. And he has this whole speech at the end about why he...
Trades paint.
Why he's still friends with Travolta after all these years. And Travolta is dating Shania Twain. And
this movie's got everything.
It really does. And Shania Twain is... It's weird because in some scenes it's like, oh, they've been dating for a long time. And in some scenes it's like they're just on their first date because she's learning things about him. So Kevin Dunn has like... artificial leg. So she's just like, well, what happened to your leg? And he's just like, well, me and John Travolta were fishing one day, and then a gator came up and just started eating my leg. And then John Travolta,
I need to see this movie.
Yeah, and then John Travolta like grabbed me underneath my armpits and pulled me out of the gator's mouth, and that's why me and him are always going to be friends. And I was just like, whoa. Like, hold on. This is like the diarrhea cup in Three Ninjas. You can't just like go on to the next scene. We need to like firmly establish this as a sequence.
Wow.
I kind of wish it was a flashback, but they never
did
a flashback. No. I want to see like a de-aged Kevin Dunn.
A de-aged alligator.
Yeah.
Would he have lost his leg had Travolta not grabbed his arms and pulled him? Is it Travolta's fault, really, that he pulled him away from his own leg?
I think the thing that I took away from it was that the gator firmly had the leg.
Yeah.
And that it was going to just anaconda
him. To eat him, yeah.
No. Or they had to just snap it off.
After he told the story, Travolta pulled me away from a gator that ate my leg.
Mm-hmm.
Was Shania Twain's response, that don't impress me much?
No.
Well, then they really missed an opportunity. Why cast her in the movie if you're not going to have her call attention to her pop star career?
No, she is a real ray of sunshine in that movie.
Is she?
She's adorable.
Okay.
I don't like her music especially, but...
Has she ever acted before?
I don't think so.
And this is what she starts with, Trading Paint? I'm ready to get into the acting biz.
Yeah.
What's this, Trading Paint? I'll do it.
I'm not proud of
Kevin
this.
Dunn and Michael Madsen? I'm in.
I'm not proud of this, but... I was slowly won over by Trading Paint. Like, at first, I was resisting it a little bit because I'm just like, this is barely as good as Speed Kills, and Speed Kills is terrible. Speed Kills is like poor man's Gotti, and that's really saying something. So,
I'm still not positive Speed Kills is a movie. I feel like it's one of those.
It's on sale at Half Price Books for $6. You can get it.
What was the movie, like the Choose Your Own Adventure movie in the 90s?
Oh, Mr. Accident?
Mr. Accident's Yahoo
Serious.
Yeah,
I forgot what it was.
That's what I feel like Speed Kills is.
Yeah, yeah.
Speed Kills is like a movie with like a D-Box.
The audience decides
what
to do.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. God, this is going to drive me crazy if I don't remember that name of that Choose Your Own Adventure movie.
It was Bob Gale, wasn't it?
Was it?
I'm pretty sure it
was. I remember they reviewed it on Siskel and Ebert, and neither of them were having it.
Well, I can't imagine why.
Yeah. So I was slowly won over by Trading Paint, and at the end of the movie, which the end is very anticlimactic, it's just like, from like minute maybe 60 to 90, it's just like, yep, and everything works out, and everything's
great.
But then they have, and I'm not a country music fan, But they have this one song on the end credits, and I'm just like, that is good. And then I listened to it on YouTube like three times in the past 12 hours. Oh, like 12 hours after I watched it, I was just like, and now it's in like my playlist. So like when I go on YouTube on my Roku, it's just like, do you want to listen to the song from Trading Paint again? And I'm like, yeah, I do.
Love theme from Trading Paint.
Yeah.
My phone still will not work, but I can tell you, because I can look it up on the laptop here. Mr. Payback.
That's it. Okay.
Mr. Payback.
All right.
AKA Speed Kills.
So I always say that Draft Day is one of the five best movies of the past 5 years.
You do say that.
I say it in jest.
Put your money where your mouth is now.
I say it in jest, but I just Googled... this is just Google what they decided. Okay. And I wrote in best movies of the 2000s. And I thought you and I could go through this list and we'll say better or worse than Draft Day.
I'm into this. Okay. I love this idea.
Okay. No Country for Old Men.
Better.
I'll go Draft Day. The Dark Knight.
Better.
I'll go Draft Day. Eternal Sunshine for the Spotless Mind. Of the Spotless Mind. I'll go The Head Says Eternal Sunshine. The Heart says Draft Day.
Okay.
Pan's Labyrinth.
Better.
Draft Day. There Will Be Blood.
Better.
Draft Day. Children of Men.
I would probably watch Draft Day first.
I'll go Draft Day.
But Children of Men is better.
Gladiator.
Well, okay. Now we're evenly matched here. I gotta go Gladiator.
Okay, I'll go Draft Day.
You haven't gone anything but Draft Day.
The Hurt Locker.
Maybe Draft Day.
The Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Lord of the Rings.
I'll go Draft Day over Fellowship.
Okay.
Two Towers and Return of the King over Draft Day.
Interesting.
Okay, so
I like Fellowship, but only in the longer cut.
Okay.
The Ulysses cut.
Okay. So I got two movies better than Draft Day in the 2000s.
Yeah.
Okay, The Departed. I'll go The Departed over Draft Day.
Yeah.
Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2, or just Kill Bill overall, I'll go Kill Bill over Draft Day.
All right.
Memento.
Memento.
I'll go Draft Day. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Draft Day.
I'm going to go Crouching Tiger.
Okay. Here's the thing. Crouching Tiger is probably way better. I haven't seen it since 98 or 2000 or whenever it came out. 2000.
Okay. Spirited Away.
Okay. Draft Day.
I'm going to go Draft Day. Sorry, Robin. You should have watched Bright. Wally.
Wally.
I'll go Draft Day. City of God.
City of God.
I'll go Draft Day.
Okay.
The Incredibles.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. Like, it's no brainer. The First Iron Man. Draft Day.
Iron Man.
Okay. Finding Nemo. I'll probably go Finding Nemo. The Prestige. I'll go Draft Day.
No, Prestige.
Almost Famous.
Almost Famous.
I mean, Vontae Mack's Almost Famous, so I'm probably going to go Draft Day. Donnie Darko. I'll probably go Donnie Darko.
Sure. Donnie Darko.
Okay. Inglourious Basterds.
List, by the way. Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah. Okay. It's a real pressure cooker here.
Anything post 2010?
Not much. Okay. Shaun of the Dead. I'll go Shaun of the Dead.
Shaun of the Dead.
Avatar.
Avatar.
Draft Day. Mulholland Drive.
You'll change your mind after you write that, right?
That's true.
Mulholland Drive.
I'll go Mulholland Drive. Batman Begins.
Batman Begins.
Draft Day. Minority Report.
Minority Report.
Draft Day. Monsters, Inc.
Maybe Draft Day.
Yeah, I would be closer if it was Monsters University.
Yeah.
Sorry, haters. Draft Day. Casino Royale. I'll go Casino Royale.
Casino Royale.
Up. I'll go Draft Day.
Draft Day.
Lost in Translation.
Lost in Translation.
I'll go Lost in Translation. Shrek.
Draft Day.
Draft Day.
No, that's the first one that I feel 100% confident with.
Requiem for a Dream.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. District 9.
District 9.
Draft Day. American Psycho.
American Psycho.
Draft Day. 28 Days Later.
28 Days Later.
Draft Day. Ratatouille.
Ratatouille.
Ratatouille. The Pianist.
I've never seen The Pianist.
I saw it once.
Draft Day?
Yeah, I'll go Draft Day. That's the right choice. The Royal Tenenbaums.
Royal Tenenbaums.
I like Royal Tenenbaums. Draft Day. Slumdog Millionaire.
Maybe Draft Day.
Draft Day no matter what. Brokeback Mountain.
Brokeback Mountain.
I like Brokeback Mountain, still draft day. Hot Fuzz.
Hot Fuzz.
Hot Fuzz. Castaway.
Castaway.
Castaway. Amelie.
Amelie.
Draft Day. Zodiac.
Zodiac.
Ty.
I found a list of 2010 to present, by the way.
Okay. So. No, I'll go Draft Day. Zodiac. I mean, Zodiac. Zodiac is the second best movie, objectively, for me, of the 2000s after Mulholland Drive. So, Zodiac. Mystic River.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. Old Boy.
Old Boy. Spike Lee or original?
Original.
Original.
I'm going to go Draft Day. And that's it. Yeah. Okay. So, 2010.
Toy Story 3.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. Inception.
Inception.
Inception. King's Speech.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. Black Swan.
Draft Day.
Maybe Draft Day. Social Network.
Social Network.
Social Network. The Fighter.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. Blue Valentine.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. The Town.
Draft Day.
Those are pretty evenly matched. Like, Draft Day is the Town of sports movies.
It is.
I'll go The Town, but it's not an easy.
Yeah, they're kissing cousins.
Yeah. Sure. Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2.
Draft Day. If it was Sorcerer's Stone, I'd go Sorcerer's Stone.
The Descendants.
Oh, I forgot what that was for a second. Draft Day.
Yeah, Draft Day. Warrior. I don't know who made this goddamn list.
Yeah, Draft Day.
Draft Day. Take Shelter. I never saw Take Shelter.
It's very good. Draft Day.
Draft Day. Drive.
Draft Day.
I'm going Drive. The Dark Knight Rises.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. Silver Linings Playbook. Oh, shit.
Wow.
This just got real.
Come back to it.
All right. Django Unchained.
Draft Day.
Are you fucking...
Django Unchained isn't one of my most favorite Tarantino.
It doesn't matter. It's still better than...
I'll go Draft Day over Death Proof, Django, and Reservoir Dogs.
Oh, you're a monster. I'm going Django. Argo.
Draft Day.
Maybe Draft Day. Looper.
I really like Looper.
Yeah.
I'll go Looper.
Looper. I don't know who made this list. These movies are not as good as the ones you read.
Well, that's the 2010s, yeah. Man.
Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. Short Term 12.
Draft Day, although Short Term 12 is good.
Spectacular Now.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. 12 Years a Slave.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. Gravity.
Draft Day.
I'll never watch Gravity again, but I think it might be better.
Okay.
Wolf of Wall Street.
Wolf of Wall Street.
Wolf of Wall Street. Her.
Draft Day.
Her. Captain Phillips.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. Dallas Buyers Club.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. Easy. Place Beyond the Pines.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. Fruitvale Station.
Draft Day.
Draft Day.
Yeah.
Mud.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. American Sniper.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. Guardians of the Galaxy.
One or two?
One.
Draft Day.
Guardians of the Galaxy. X-Men Days of Future Past.
Draft Day.
X-Men Days of Future Past. Interstellar.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. Gone Girl.
Draft Day.
Gone Girl. Imitation Game.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. Grand Budapest Hotel.
Draft Day.
Grand Budapest Hotel. Whiplash.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. Birdman.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. Boyhood.
Draft Day.
Boyhood.
This is maybe my favorite game that I have.
Foxcatcher.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. Force Awakens.
Can I tell a story about Foxcatcher real quick?
Please do.
It's a movie that I saw that made. With Jan and JB at the Regal in Lincolnshire, and as I was getting out of my car, I slipped and fell on my side on a patch of ice.
Still better than Foxcatcher.
That was better than Foxcatcher.
Yeah.
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 Sorry, what was that?
Force Awakens.
Oh, Force Awakens.
Force Awakens. Room.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. Sicario.
Draft Day.
Sicario. Creed.
Have you seen Sicario, Day of the Soldado?
I have not.
You'll change your mind about Sicario. Okay. Creed or Draft Day?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, yeah. Real Sophie's Choice.
We'll go Creed.
A real Sonny's Choice.
Yeah. I'll go Creed, and I'll go Silver Linings Playbook.
Okay, all right. Okay. So we answered that one. Right. The Revenant. Oh, Creed. I'm going Creed over Draft Day.
I'll go Draft Day, because I don't watch The Revenant.
I'll never watch The Revenant again.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll go Draft Day, even though I think The Revenant is better. The Big Short.
Oh, Draft Day.
Draft Day. Yeah. Hateful Eight.
Draft Day. I'm not here to make you mad. I'm just speaking from my heart.
I
like Brian
it.
Drew.
I appreciate that. I will choose The Hateful Eight.
That's fine.
The Hateful Eight only made $54 million, apparently.
It's because it was 3 hours and change after previews.
Good point.
Yeah.
Spotlight.
The heart says Draft Day. The head says Spotlight. I'll still go Spotlight, though.
Spotlight. The Martian.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. Inside Out.
Inside Out.
Inside Out. La La Land.
La La Land.
La La Land. Moonlight.
I know what I'm supposed to answer.
I'm going Draft Day.
I'm
going
to go Draft Day also. Moonlight's great, but Draft Day.
I don't even like Draft Day that much.
Apparently you do.
It's just a movie that I would watch before a lot of these other ones. Yeah. It's not necessarily what's better, but like, if I had to choose, I would watch Draft Day before I would watch Moonlight.
Yeah.
Moonlight is the objectively better made movie.
Yeah.
Arrival.
Draft Day, 100%.
Arrival. Manchester by the Sea.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. Fences.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. Hidden Figures.
Draft Day.
Never saw it. Draft Day. Hell or High Water.
Hell or High Water.
Hell or High Water. A Monster Calls. Never saw that one either.
The movie's heartbreaking and great, but I will go Draft Day.
Which is not heartbreaking. Yeah. Logan.
Draft Day.
Logan.
Logan's really good, though.
Dunkirk.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. Baby Driver.
Draft Day.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know which one I would put on. I might put on Baby Driver.
I thought you were kind of mixed on Baby Driver.
Oh, I don't love Baby Driver.
Have you gotten more of a fan, to become more of a fan of it over time?
No.
Okay.
I think I would only put it on because I'm probably going to get the same... from both movies, the same level of enjoyment.
Yeah.
But Baby Driver has more of the stuff in it that I like in movies.
Okay.
Like people shooting at each other.
Yeah.
And music and cool editing, and Draft Day doesn't.
Yeah. For some reason, my takeaway from all of this is I kind of want to watch Baby Driver when I get home.
Interesting. Yeah. I got to watch Batman Forever, apparently.
Yeah.
And at the drive-in, and the 1999 Carmen Electra calendar. Lady Bird.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. Three Billboards.
Draft Day.
Draft Day. Call Me by Your Name.
Call Me by Draft Day.
All right. That's this list.
Yeah. Yeah. Now let's do the 80s.
Where does it rank among Costner movies?
You would think it would be pretty high. I'm putting it over most of these most American films.
Last 20 years.
I don't know. I think in terms of pure enjoyment, it's probably got to be like top three.
Okay. The other two being?
No, oh, geez. I knew you were going to ask me this. Open Range.
Okay. Obviously, the Ulysses cut of Waterworld.
And I guess probably either JFK or Dances with Wolves or Perfect World, one of those three.
So one of those three for one spot. Draft Day and Open Range for the other spot.
Yeah.
Got it.
Okay. But Draft Day and Open Range would be one and two for sure.
Perfect World or Draft Day?
Draft Day.
Okay. Dances with Wolves or Draft Day?
Draft Day.
JFK or Draft Day?
JFK.
Open Range or Draft Day?
Open Range.
Okay, so it goes...
Open Range, JFK, Draft Day.
Yeah.
And those.
Done. We figured this out.
Yeah.
Anything else you need to work out? Because...
Yeah, I'm sure there is. I can't think of it right now.
Anything else about Draft Day you want to say?
No, just that if you don't like it, don't tell me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
There's a good chance no one will listen to this podcast, so it's okay, because people are like, what? They're talking about Draft Day this week? I'll wait till next week. Maybe they'll talk about Avengers Endgame.
I think this maybe is either one of the weirdest shows we've ever done, or at the end, it might be the best show we've ever done.
Well, the Draft Day game, I feel like, saved it.
Yeah.
Not that it needed saving,
yeah.
But the Draft Day game was a good deal of fun.
FYI, I looked ahead at the release date calendar.
Yeah.
It looks like our flashback weekend show will probably be Hobbs and Shaw.
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, that's something.
Yeah.
I guess people will expect that we're going to do a show on that, so we might as well do a show on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yikes. Womp, anyway, womp. This was fun. Thank you.
Yeah. No, thank you. I appreciate the platform.
It was fun to revisit this movie. And like I said, it was exactly what I was in the mood for last night. So.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, I'm glad that we went through this exercise because now you know how great it is.
I do. I really would be curious, though, for you to rank this somewhere, like in your top 20. I want to know where it falls.
It definitely, yeah, I don't know where
it
would
fall. Doesn't crack the top 10. I know it doesn't crack the top 5, but I thought it might have a shot at 5 through 10.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, like, yeah, those 6 through 10s would be really weird. Yeah. I'd have to think about it. I think
I've never really done my 6 through 10.
Yeah, I haven't either. I think that my 5 right now, I feel pretty good about my 5. Okay. I think that it's going to be number 5 is Spider-Man.
The OG?
The OG.
Okay. Number, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that movie really hits me. I really love it. Number 4 would be Dogfight.
Okay.
Number 3 would be Pulp Fiction. Number 2 would be Jaws. And number 1 is now Saturday Night Fever.
Wow. So your old number 1 no longer even in the top 5.
No, sorry, 2001. I got as much as I'll ever get out of you.
Wasn't SLP your number 1?
Yeah, that was in there too. I think that was number 2.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not in the top 5 either.
That's not in the top 5 either.
Bounced. Is it in the top 10?
SLP? No. Yeah. I mean, I still really like SLP, but I think that it's a movie that responded to me very much at the moment that it responded to me, and then now I'm maybe not as angsty as I was before.
Sure.
Probably cuz of draft day.
Really even you out.
Yeah, I don't know. No, I think draft day was like, it like gave me permission to like Wishmaster and right. Little Italy right. and Birth of the Dragon and stuff like that. Because now I'm just like, oh, people are going to be like, okay, this is just Adam draft daying it. Like, it's okay.
Yeah.
I can just let my freak flag fly.
Right. Do I have those movies?
I don't know.
I don't either.
I'm sure you do.
I mean, I know my love of Avatar is like kind of a joke, but I also genuinely love Avatar.
Yeah. I like Avatar more because you like Avatar so much.
Waterworld is my new Avatar also because, like, that movie's good.
Mm-hmm. I'm getting into that mode of, like, when I watch, like, Alita Battle Angel, I was just like, I like this way more than I should. Yeah. Or, like, when I rewatched the Star Wars prequels, I didn't like Phantom Menace still, but Attack of the Clones worked better for me than it ever has when I saw it before Last Jedi. Yeah. Because it just reminded me so much of, like, this is a 2002 blockbuster. Right, enjoy it. Right. And there's a certain charm to that that is missing from the blockbusters of 2017 or 18 or 19.
Yeah, we're not far away from blockbuster season. So gear up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeehaw.
Yeah, Avengers right after The Curse of La Llorona. Or La Llorona.
La Llorona.
La Llorona. The curse of the Cleveland Browns has been lifted by La Llorona.
Anyway, thank you guys for listening. We will be back next week with a show not on draft day. So really, why would you listen?
Right, exactly. But listen, no matter what.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.